Hello and a warm welcome to another exciting episode of our podcast series, Crafting Your Writing Career, Paths and Possibilities, brought to you by the Learner Me team. I'm Mahua, your host, and today we are continuing our exploration of the L&D field with Shalini Dugal, Director of Learning and Development at Birlasoft. We will delve deeper into the career opportunities available in the L&D field and hear from a hiring manager about what they look for in aspiring candidates. So let's get started. Welcome to part two of the podcast episode, Shalini.
Thank you so much for your time.
So Shalini, the first question that I would ask you, in L&D, you have so many different roles. You have project management, instructional design, training, facilitation, and OD. Can you give us an idea about the different career paths one can expect to proceed in the field of L&D?
Career paths would be related to all of the areas that you spoke about. Either you can explore a very specialized career path, right, in any of these areas. So you can choose to be an expert in LMS or have a lot of experience on how to set up LMSs, run them, evaluate different types of LMSs. So it's more the HR technology bit that you're combining with, say, L&D there. You can also choose to take up a career path in the area of, say, content development, facilitation, or you can have a hyper-specialization in the area of content development through specializing in instructional design and creating a lot of world-class content there, which can be utilized both for facilitation as well as for, say, e-learning modules. And then, of course, is the facilitation bit. And even within facilitation, you could be somebody who specializes in process training or language training or behavioral training or leadership skills or technical skills. So it's really very vast there as well. Or you go into project management or program management where you're really holding everything together. It could involve, say, being a learning partner where you're doing the interface with a business and getting inputs and then executing. Or you can be a program manager within any of these domains. So you can be a program manager only for the leadership skills, right? Where you're holding the piece, but the business interface is being done by somebody else. So it's really very, very vast. You know, it depends on the organization that you're working with in terms of employee numbers, in terms of the strength of the L&D team itself, etc. And that really determines what kind of specialization you get into. In smaller organizations, one person could be doing everything. And of course, as you grow in your career, you know, you are holding everything together, right? So everything kind of comes up to you, including the LMS, the instructional design, the facilitation, the program management. You have people who are involved more in the operational bit or in taking up each of those areas, but then you are ultimately responsible for all. So that's how I see it.
Okay. So, depending on the size of the organization, one may have to do everything versus some part of it or maybe highly specialized. So then it's better to have that mindset that you will have to be open to learning a lot of different kinds of skills, right? Like you should be open to facilitation along with maybe creating content, along with program management. So be open to learning these different aspects. And then you can choose to go into your own career path, correct, whichever specialization you want to pick up.
I think you also need to be open on the other side. So one is being open to learning and doing lots more, and also being open to doing less if you're joining a bigger organization. You know, if you're used to doing more than to doing less, and you're doing more of
type of work. Yeah. I mean, some people may find it monotonous just to do one type of work. Yeah, so you have to know where you are heading that. Shalini, if we have to switch between industries, let's say if somebody is training in an IT organization versus going to an auto manufacturing organization versus, let's say, a financial organization. So what changes for an L&D person when they are shifting from industry to industry?
Sure. So skills in the leadership and behavioral kind of skills development space are highly fungible. So say if you're doing time management for an IT professional, time management in terms of the principles, the constructs, the approach, etc., remains the same even if you're working in retail. The context may change, right? So the kind of examples you're using, the use cases, the case studies, etc., all of that changes, but the core remains the same. So if I know about negotiations, if I know the core, then I can apply it in the sales context, I can apply it in an IT delivery context, I can apply it, you know, for negotiating with internal stakeholders. Principles will largely remain the same. The context will change. So in that way, it's fungible. I've worked across a wide range of industries, insurance, IT services, digital imaging, HR consulting. So it's easy to switch if you're in the space of leadership and behavioral skills development. However, if you're in the space of technical skills, so somebody who's training on a technical skill area in IT services will not be able to switch to industry like digital imaging because, you know, the kind of product that you're dealing with is entirely different. So you need to be specialized in that technical area, whether it's a product area or an IT services area or whatever it is. So in that way, it gets limited. But in terms of behavioral leadership skills development, I think that remains fairly flexible and similar across.
So Shalini, this is out of curiosity that I'm asking. So once you develop courses or content for leadership skills, behavioral skills, do you need to change it or it's more about facilitation later on?
So the content needs to be updated. Even within an organization, the content will get contextualized to the team that you're delivering a training for. The examples will have to be updated from time to time. So if I'm delivering a concept on emotional intelligence, for example, to a team which is an enabling or a support finance, versus delivering emotional intelligence content to, say, a sales team. So while the concept of emotional intelligence remains the same, in terms of what I'm saying to those people, that will change, or how I'm making it relevant to their background and their content. But I think largely it remains the same. Of course, it gets updated as and when new approaches or new concepts or new theories come up, which is rare. It doesn't happen very often. But for example, there's something on trust that we use internally. But the concept also needs to be revised from time to time. People need refresher courses. But if I've learned a particular approach or a theory on trust and when I'm coming back, I should get something additional over and above that.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm training person X in year one, but I want to go back to them in year two or year three and talk about trust once again, then there has to be something for them to kind of walk away extra with, right? Apart from just the refresher. I think people also come with new approaches. You know, the context of the entire organization changes, just given the speed of change is just so high in today's business context. I have a team member today who leaves and another person joins. It's good to push new twist to the same content, right? And they'll add their own flair, their own bit. So from that sense, I'm a core propagator of visiting and updating from time to time.
Okay. Yeah. So now switching to, let's say, larger vision of L&D function as such. There is a vision with which L&D is set up. So could you give us some idea or overview of that vision? Typically, what happens when somebody is setting up a L&D team in any organization?
I think the L&D vision has to align with the business vision, right? L&D exists because there's a business to be run, to be, you know, grown and so on. So, and there are those business goals and business strategies. So I think it's very, you know, important for the L&D strategy and the L&D vision to be completely in sync with what business is driving, so that L&D as an enabler function enables or, you know, helps business grow in the necessary direction. So I think that's one. It's important to kind of know where the organization is headed in terms of the goal strategy, you know, some of the forecasts in terms of the kind of skills that will be needed, the people who will be needed to meet those goals. And then plan from there, right? So if I'm planning, say, the strategy for next year, I need to know what business is planning, area of business we are getting into. Are we continuing to expand where we are? So what are the skills that will be needed accordingly? Are we looking at expanding employee strength? If you're planning to increase employee strength, where is that expansion planned, right? What are the skills from a behavioral standpoint or a leadership standpoint that will become important? Is there a succession pipeline that needs to be put into place at the top level, at the mid-level, wherever? How many people need to be identified? What are the competencies that we've identified for those people to acquire? And then plan from there. So it really flows from the business strategy, from a business vision. And, you know, that's how you plan kind of backward is how I see.
And if you had to set up a team, what are the key skills that you would look for in your team?
So if I was setting up a team, if I have my strategy in place, this is business strategy, I would look at what are the skills that are needed within L&D to fulfill those requirements. So there could be a skill for, you know, a technical skills development for the work. There could be a requirement for behavioral skills, leadership skills, etc. I also look at the volume of work and thereby, you know, decide what is the employee strength needed. Of course, depending on budgets available, etc. But the skills should definitely be there. And this is at the basic skeleton level. Of course, it can be beefed up depending on the volume of work that comes in. But somebody who can support on the behavioral leadership side, somebody who can support on the technical side, somebody who can support on the tech side in terms of the LMS. So I think these three are the basic. And then maybe somebody who does the business partnering bit. So that can be done by these people, if the volume is not much. But those are essentially what I would do.
What are your assessment considerations when you're hiring somebody for your team? Like these specific skill sets that you mentioned.
So I would assess basis the job description. So if I'm assessing somebody for, say, leadership facilitator profile, so the job description would have their job as, somebody who's skilled in the area of training delivery or training facilitation, content development, doing the stakeholder management, awareness of LMS, be able to do effectiveness checks, etc. So those would be the core KPIs. Basis this, I would identify the competencies needed, right? So the competencies could be, communication skills. They could be, ability to kind of collaborate. Depending on the seniority that I'm hiring for, decision-making skills and so on and so forth. So I identify both the, the technical or the functional skills required for the role and the behavioral skills required. And that's what I would assess for. And it would change from role to role.
Mm-hmm. In one of our discussions before this interview, you had mentioned STAR technique of hiring. Could you tell us more about it?
Sure. So the STAR technique is situation, task, action, and result. I hope I remember the acronym correctly. But essentially what you do while using the STAR technique is it's a way of doing a competency-based assessment or a competency-based interviewing or, a behavioral event interviewing. It's also called, either a CBI or a BEI. But essentially, I would ask people to talk about a specific example from their experience where they have applied that particular skill. So, for example, a question I could ask, can you tell me about a time where you understood a business need and developed a program and delivered it? How did you go about it and what was the outcome? Right. So, it's not a theoretical question where I'm saying, how would you normally go about assessing a business? But I'm asking them to talk about a specific instance in the past. So it's specific, it's situation-based. What is the task that was involved? What was the action that they took? And what was the result? It's grounded in their experience in terms of what they've actually done.
Mm-hmm. So here, people may not have done exactly what they should ideally do, right? And they realize maybe that in this situation, what I did then was I figured out I made mistakes, and now if I have to handle differently, I'll do it this way. So that's an opportunity they have to speak about as well, right? When they are explaining that.
So mostly you would ask for successes that you had in the past. You would also go into the area of learning, things that did not go well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So what happened in that situation, and why did it not go well, and how would you do it differently? You go into both areas of things that worked out and things for learning opportunity.
And Shalini, let's say if we have to give some tips to these youngsters, like let's say freshers, absolute freshers who are planning to join the L&D function. So how should they prepare themselves? And first of all, to get into the job role of L&D. And then once they have joined in, what is the learning path, or what are the skills they should be kind of trying to learn and imbibe from others so that they are able to grow further in their career?
So when I hire, say, campus freshers for my team, I think the number one thing that I look out for is openness to learning. So people are pretty much, when they're starting out in their careers, they don't have experience, but they need to be kind of open to acquire that experience and ability to see what they can do in a situation, ability to take feedback, ability to go out, do their research and see how, that particular task can be done. So the ability to, really apply themselves and not just, kind of wait for things to be given to them. So what would they do to achieve a particular task, right? And I've seen, both examples where people with minimal supervision right at the beginning of their careers are able to do brilliantly, right? Because of the application of themselves and the ability to learn, right? So the ability to learn doesn't always have to be that if I'm telling you something and that's how you learn, it's also the ability to learn on your own, right? Mm-hmm. So, or to really be resourceful, go out, talk to people, figure out how to do it, and then to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those are some things that I look out for. And you know, there are also people who are, say, experienced, you know, are not proactive, right? So they will wait to be told. So I look out for things, you know, things like ability to learn and the, you know, the desire to do, right? And to be proactive, to have that initiative. I think that's, that carries you through no matter what area you pick up, right? As long as those two things are in place, you can really succeed in any.
So being proactive, yeah, that applies like right through from your first day at work to the last day at work. So if we talk specifically about mid-career professionals, so what would you advise them? How should they maybe gear up for next level growth? What should they do? What kind of skills or what kind of attitudinal or values they should look at?
So I think for mid-level professionals who are looking for career growth, I think one of the, you know, criteria for vertical movement is that, are you already performing above where you are, you know, the current role that you're at, right? Are you already displaying some level of competency that's applicable at the next level? And that, again, comes from being proactive. If I have my KPIs, I know that, say, you know, for example, say I have to achieve, say, 80% coverage for all the programs that I conduct. So do I stop when I hit 80, right? Or do I, you know, go to 85, or do I go to 90? Do I try for, you know, sometimes say 95 or 100, right? Or even if I'm aiming for 80 in things which are really very, you know, challenging or hard, what is the amount of effort that I'm putting in, right? So if people are not coming for my session, do I say, you know, I've done everything, I've sent out mails, I've spoken to managers, people are not coming, what do I do? Or do you look for an alternative, right? Do you make things happen? So I think that's really the key to growth, right? Can you make things happen?
Mm-hmm.
And for making things happen, you have to kind of stretch and look at alternatives. Stretching may not always mean putting in more hours, right? So that's not the kind of stretch I'm talking about. It's about intellectual stretching your effort, right? So have I tried everything that I can do, and what else can I do, right, to make it happen? So it's not about spending 10 hours or 12 hours working. It's about making sure that your efforts are impactful, right? Even if you're working, say, the regular 8 and a half hour shift, but are your effort making the kind of impact which is needed? And that's what gets you noticed, right? And that's what kind of takes you to the
mm-hmm. And when you say that if things are not happening, making things happen, a lot will depend on how curious you are and try to find out different avenues and maybe speak to a lot of people just to find out or get some suggestions, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And somebody already at a senior level, so what are the things? Now, vertical growth may or may not be possible depending on, again, the organization size, right? And what's the end level at the organization? So what suggestions you have for them? What can they look at?
So people who are at a senior level, I think at that level, it's really about perhaps not doing so much on your own, but making sure that things are happening, whatever needs to happen at your level, wherever you are in the hierarchy, right? So making it happen through your people that you work with. So I think it's important. And, you know, at that stage, it's important to keep learning. I think, when you reach a high stage in your career, you perhaps don't find the time to learn, or even sometimes the need to learn, right? Because you may not need to learn a new technical skill, or you may not need to learn a particular behavioral skill, etc. It's not really essential for you to do your role, but it's important, right? And that's, you know, keeps you growing. At a mid-level, at a junior level, you still need to keep learning, which is fundamentally integral to your role, right? So mm-hmm. if I'm in a tech role at a junior level, then I need to constantly upgrade my skills so that I remain relevant. But not so much so at, say, a senior level, at, say, you know, whatever senior level you are in the hierarchy. But so it's important for you to do that yourself, to remind yourself that I need to continue learning. Also, it's important to have your goals in place, right? So what level of seniority are you aiming for? Right? How much responsibility do you want to take on? And how much can you, you know, do complete justice to in terms of delivering outcomes and results? So I think those are things which are important. It's very important to network at the senior level. That's what gets you opportunity. So those things I would say, yeah.
Networking is something that I would say for me, I find it difficult. in terms of making meaningful connections. So sending out a network request is fine, but unless you have a meaningful dialogue going on, that connection is not active, I would say, right? So how do you make it an active and a meaningful connection or meaningful network that way?
Sure. So I'm also not very good at networking. Let me own up to that. It's not my strong suit. But I think it's really about putting yourself out there. So the first is to establish a connect. That's essential. That's fundamental to networking. It could be as simple as a LinkedIn request. A vast network gives you a reach when you're, say, posting something on LinkedIn, for example, or, you know, building your visibility from that standpoint. I think it definitely to go deeper than that. It's important to have a personal connect. I think it's very important to kind of constantly water the network that you already have. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, say, past colleagues that you your friends from college, from school, who are also working in a similar industry. So why not go back to them, right? Or maintain that connect with them, because you've known, you've had a relationship with them. But oftentimes we forget, you know, to kind of to maintain those. So it's also about that, to keep in touch with people who at one point of time you were close to, or at least, you know, had a connect, and at least maintain that network.
So Shalini, I believe you have to go now. So I'll not stop you with more questions. So thank you so much again for your time. Thank you.
Sure. So much more. I really appreciate this opportunity.
As we wrap up today's episode, I sincerely hope that you have found this conversation both valuable and enlightening. Your feedback and comments are greatly appreciated, so please feel free to share your thoughts. If you have enjoyed this discussion, don't forget to hit the like button and do share it with your friends, colleagues, or anyone you believe could benefit from our conversation. Moreover, consider subscribing to our channel to receive notifications of upcoming discussions as soon as they are released. Your subscription ensures that you won't miss out on our future content. Thank you once again for tuning in. Wishing you a wonderful day ahead.